So we're in the middle of a lesson, and it's part of a larger series of lessons. The larger series is on rethinking prayer. I suspect that many have given up on their prayer practice, at least the way that they prayed in the early part of their spiritual journeys, because the narrative that we have wedged in our minds about what prayer is and about what God is and about what prayer does, that has gotten difficult for us. And so we're doing a lesson in which we rethink the gut instincts that we carry around inside of ourselves about prayer. That's the larger context for this series of lessons. And now in this section of the lessons, we're thinking about a specific type of prayer. We are calling it the prayers of detachment. And this is a prayer legacy left us by our heritage that helps us detach from the lesser self, the ego as self. And so we've explored prayer practices that help us detach from habitual practice, mindless practice, from thought patterns that are deeply embedded in us that are often unseen but are also quite toxic. We've talked about prayer practices that help us detach from these instincts and reflex-driven responses that cause us to live our lives as automatons, not even seeing that we're driven by habit-wired brains. And in this specific lesson within that section, we're looking at one of the detachment prayers, the prayer that helps us detach from the stories that we tell ourselves. Stories, we've seen, are very powerful. They're deterministic in the lives that we live. They define for us what this daily life episode means or what that daily life episode means. They define for us the expectations that we bring to our daily lives, broad expectations. What do we expect from God? What do we expect from people? What do we expect from ourselves? What does life do to people who are like this? And what does life do to people who are like that? What makes us safe or puts us in danger? What gets us ahead or puts us behind? And in the same way that language frames for us the reality that we live in, these stories, they tick away in the background of our lives, usually unseen, usually unexamined. But they influence everything. We don't measure them. We don't assess them. We don't question their helpfulness. We don't wonder about their truthfulness. They just sit there. And we explode on our spouse. And we don't realize that it's because he or she has crossed some boundary that our story insists that we maintain. Or we burn with hatred through the night hours towards someone who has wronged us. Or we make decisions that diminish us, because that decision fits into our internal story. Stories often will cause us to step away from possibilities that could unfold in our lives, spiritual possibilities or relational possibilities or even financial and career possibilities, because that possibility doesn't fit into the narrative that we're carrying around inside of ourselves about the way things are, about the way I am, about the way things go. And the tragedy of this state of affairs, according to our spiritual tradition, is that most of the time, these stories that drive our decisions and our reactions and our life choices, they do so sight unseen. The stories that drive us function below the level of conscious awareness. And it is to this state of affairs that our tradition offers a spiritual gift. It is a prayer practice. The prayer of self-awareness and self-disclosure, we've called it. For most of our history, it has been called the prayer of confession. So, we've been looking at this prayer in three steps. Step one, we pay attention to our negative emotions. If you missed that section, I'd encourage you to listen online. Step two, we undertake a thorough self-examination. We began that part last week. We'll continue it today. And then the third step is we engage forthright self-disclosure. So, picking up where we were last week, we had begun to look at the second step. We undertake a thorough self-examination. We saw that the first part of that was to stir ourselves to the two-step dance of the spiritual journey, desire and attentiveness. We talked about how our brains tend to go into autopilot and we tend to think what we always think. That's the way our brains are just wired. We do that. And so our tradition has encouraged us to break up that habitual thinking response and to position ourselves in the dance, desiring and stirred to attentiveness. And so we start with a prayer. Again, if you missed that section, listen online. By the way, I don't think you can yet listen online to that one, because when we were hacked, the thing that got the tool, the portal that the hackers used, was our FTP upload process. That's how we upload our lessons. So the part that uploads, everything else is working but that part. So hopefully that'll be working by the end, hopefully by today. Anyway, last week we saw how the prayer of examine is the second part of this thorough self-examination. That's part of our regular practice here at NRCC. If you've been around for a while, you've been invited to practice examine. We integrate a series of plumb line questions into the regular rhythm of our lives by simply reading the lists of the ancient virtues, stilling ourselves, and listening for the interior promptings of the Holy Spirit. And we often see, when we practice that, what we would otherwise not have seen. It's a simple practice that affords us what Jesus prayed for us, eyes that see and ears that hear. And then I reminded us to write stuff down, because if you journal or if you write letters that you don't send or if you use bullet points, you find the part of our spiritual heritage that has been put in place to stir ourselves to another way of awareness, another way of alertness. Because when we write things down, when we frame the thoughts and the feelings into words that we then put onto some place, it goes to a different place in our brains, it deepens our thoughtfulness, and it helps us in the renewing of our minds. And then at the end of last week's lesson, we got to the heart of the practice, which is the questions that we ask ourselves. Self-awareness questions about the stories that we tell ourselves. I'm going to pick up there where we left off last week by telling you a story of someone in our community, and in the process illustrate how we ask ourselves the kinds of questions that elicit self-awareness. There's a woman in our community. Now again, maybe she's a woman, maybe she's a man, I'm not telling you, I'm fuzzing up the story. A woman who carries a deep commitment to living the right kind of life and to doing the right kind of thing. She came from a pretty unhealthy family system, and her family had an idea about how girls should behave, what a girl's place was in the family. And her personality conspired with the family system as well, so that she became the caregiver of the family for her ill family. They were ill in their minds, and they were ill in their hearts, and they were ill in their relationships, and they were ill in their bodies. So she stayed at home for a long time as a young woman, as caregiver for her unhealthy family. She made a great deal of sacrifice. She sacrificed her social life and her time and her energy, some of the career-advancing things that were before her, even love in her own life. And she did it so that she could do the right thing. That's very important to her. And so she carried a heavy load of duty and responsibility, especially for her brother and especially for her mother. Her father was, for all practical purposes, out of the picture, and her mother was ill, and her brother was a troublemaker, and her father didn't do much, so she held everything together. For years, she was the one keeping the family's wheels on the bus. But even after she left home, she remained on call all the time, still holding things together, even from another state. She would have to make regular trips home in order to handle crises. She did regular phone counseling in order to keep her needy family members from going over the edge, always on call, always the caregiver. And she did it about as well as she could. She gave it her best. And she did it cheerfully. And she did it willingly. And she determined what a good person would do in this very difficult situation. And she determined that she was going to be that good person. And that went on for a long time. And then, some years later, she began to notice a regular occurrence. She began to notice the trigger that we've been talking about in this prayer practice, the trigger that says, okay, now it's time to pull this prayer practice out of the spiritual toolbox. Our tradition's invitation is to notice when we have an afflictive emotion. And she began to see herself having recurring angry outbursts toward her family. By now, they were older. They had moved on in their lives in many ways, and the time demands that they put upon her diminished. Also, she had her own family and she had her own life, but whenever there was a holiday or there was some reason to interact, she noticed her propensity to anger. I want you to remember from last week this diagram of the layers of human awareness or human consciousness. Remember that outer ring way out there on the outside. We notice a bad thought, or we notice a bad deed, or we notice a bad word. In the old religious language, we would have used the word sin there. When you notice that you've done a sin, now it's time for the prayer of confession. But we're not using that language because it's gotten a little bit fuzzy in terms of how we think about it. So there, on the outer layer of awareness, we've gathered those experiences under the heading an afflictive emotion. And we've said, afflictive emotions are our friends. They are our friends because they tell us that something is going on in the deeper rings of awareness down there in the lower layers of our consciousness. And the emotion or the word or the deed invites us into the practice, and it invites us to ask ourselves a series of questions, and you've heard me say that. So, I'm angry with my family members, she notices, and it happens quite a lot. It seems like whenever we get together, this thing happens. And so that's the trigger. That's the invitation. So off she goes to do the practice. And in the first layer, as you can see, the questions that we ask ourselves are, what is the story that I tell myself? And so she starts off with that. And she comes very quickly to the story. This is not hard at all, she said. My family is selfish. My family is disrespectful. My family is foolish. And they don't take responsibility for their actions. They do stupid things, things that perpetuate their own unhealthiness, and then they suffer the consequences of their foolish choices, and they ask me to jump in and save them from those consequences. And I do it, damn it. I do it again and again and again all the time. When that's the story that I tell myself, the right course of action becomes very clear. I guess I just have to harden myself against my family. I guess I have to become a little bit more callous. I have to become a little bit less caring. I can't be as subject to their needs as I have been. So there it is. I've done the practice. I've explored the story that I tell myself. Check. I've settled on a response as a result of my understanding of that story. Check. Except, when we were speaking, I said, there are a couple of rules of thumb that you kind of have to know about. And I want you to know about them as well. Rule of thumb in the process of asking ourselves questions number one. Rule of thumb number one is this. When the story that we think we are telling ourselves is about them and not about us, we're usually not done. There's usually more. And hers was about them. It was a true story. They were disrespectful. They were unhealthy. All the stuff she was telling herself, it was all true. But we're usually not finished with the process when our story is about them. The second rule of thumb is that when the afflictive emotion that triggers our response is anger, that is also an invitation to dig a little bit deeper. Because anger is like a circuit breaker emotion. It clicks in when we've ignored the more subtle emotions for too long. Because what happens is something is going on down there, and it's for some reason not getting press. It's not getting playtime. It's not getting awareness. And so it just keeps accumulating, 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 kind of like when you have a pressure cooker and you have that valve that's down and the pressure's building up, building up, building up. And anger is like when the thing pops and psh, it comes out. When it comes out as having been suppressed too long, it usually comes out as anger. Anger is the buildup of suppressed emotions that will not be contained any longer, and they surge. And when they surge, they come out as anger. But anger is a cloaking emotion. It's a cover of these other more subtle emotions that we have not heeded. So, when she learned about the two general rules of thumb about seeking out the stories that we tell ourselves, she became suspect of her story because, yes, sure enough, my story's about them, and yes, pretty much the emotion I have is anger. Now, when she began to be suspicious of her story, she realized, and by the way, not uncommonly, she realized, man, this is the story I've been telling myself for 9 years. I've been holding on to this story for such a long, long time that it is about them. But she began to suspect that she had not gone deeply enough. So to help her go more deeply, she began to pay attention to the second layer that you see on the diagram, starting to pay attention to our feelings, paying attention to emotion. The physical sensations that are associated with feelings happen in our bodies. Now, we've been taught to ignore them. We've been taught to suppress them. And so many of us are not very good at exploring this layer of awareness. It's tough. Because it's tough, there are a lot of people in our community that, in the process of learning how to do this, have found a very trusty tool. It's the simple practice of reading the list of emotion words. It's not unlike what we did when we were reading the ancient virtues. We would read the virtues, we would pause and listen for a little prompting or a nudging. Well, it's not unlike that, only instead of reading the virtues, we read an exhaustive list of emotion words. So as I've said, there is a physical sensation associated with a feeling that we're not very adept at reading. We're not very tuned to them. But somewhere in our bodies, we can feel optimism. I know where I feel optimism. I feel optimism somewhere right behind my forehead. That's where it happens in my body. There are places in our bodies that we associate with feeling rebellious. When you feel rebellious, it happens in your body somewhere. Same is true when you feel admiring, or when you feel brave, or when you feel embarrassed, or when you feel disgusted, or when you feel disgusting. There is a place in the body where that sensation happens, where we feel that feeling. These things happen in our bodies. And when we struggle to pay attention to them, and then give a name to them, it helps us fill in the stories that we tell ourselves, the parts that our minds have filtered out. And we become much more accurate in the telling of our stories. So she began to scan her body for sensations. And she got out our trusty 300 feeling words tool, and she read them, and she paused, and she listened for one of those interior promptings. And she found one. She found a word that pinged her. And that pinging or that nudging I have referred to as a prompting of the Holy Spirit. And the word that pinged her was the feeling word suffocated. I feel suffocated when I relate to my family, she realized. And as soon as she named the word, a memory came to mind. And she was standing in the kitchen, cooking for her mother, worrying about her ne'er-do-well brother, and right there in the kitchen, she felt the feelings of suffocation. The needs of the family, the demands of their unhealthiness, the recurring, never-stopping, never-will-stop demands, they were choking her. And she felt that sensation, the feeling of smothering, the ever-mounting, never-ending, never going away responsibilities, suffocation. There at the kitchen counter, she felt it. And today, running in the background of so many of her family interactions, it was still there. She was still feeling it. And she was still telling the story that evoked those feelings. But now that she could name the feeling, she could backfill the story that was producing the feeling. Her story was, you can't win here. Her story was, you can never get away. They will always be sucking you dry. They will never get any better. They will never take care of their responsibilities. They will never go away. And that feeling, the powerlessness to change them, and the suffocation that they imposed upon her was rooted in a story that she had suppressed for a long time, and now it was coming out, and it was coming out as anger. So in order to get to the first layer of awareness, she had to go to the second layer of awareness and then backfill the first layer. So she accessed the wisdom of her body, and her body helped her understand her story. "Ah," she said to herself, "I now see that I believe my family suffocates me, and more to the point, I believe I can never get away from them." Later, she could begin to think about other questions, but first, the questions that framed the first part of the exercise framed was, what is this story? Later, she can ask herself if this is a true or a false story, but right now, the question is, what is the story? First, she has to unearth it so she can then ask more questions and better questions. Later on, she can ask, could I stop this overwhelming feeling? Later on, she can ask, could I stop this way of relating to my family that causes me to feel suffocating? Later on, she can ask, could I do it today? Do I really have to have a milestone in place before I can do it? Could I do it tomorrow? Could I do it over time? If I want to, can I do this? And then she can ask herself the question later, once she realizes what the story is, why haven't I changed my relationship with my family before? Later on, she can begin to ask, is it because that I believe this is what a good person would do and I'm so committed to being a good person? And if so, is that truly what a good person would do? She could ask herself that question later. Would good people indeed keep relating to my family the way that I relate to my family? And could I really change things with them? If I did change things with them, what would they do in response? And then what would I do when they responded? Because I don't think it's going to be pretty when they respond to my change. What will I do then? Because the core of this practice is asking ourselves a series of ever-improving questions. Asking ourselves a series of ever-deepening questions. As we take the outer layers off, we begin to ask better and more probing questions. And our questions are improved immeasurably if we pay attention to our bodies. Our bodies help us find out the story that we tell ourselves. I've said this many times before, our brains lie to us. They will edit things out that we don't want to see. They will edit things out that are too painful. But our bodies just aren't that sophisticated. Feelings come from the lower parts of our brains, the reptilian part of our brain, the mammalian part of our brain. Consequently, they don't know how to lie. You need a big prefrontal human brain to do that. So our bodies are deep interior truth tellers. And because they're truth tellers, they will often tell us truths that we don't want to hear. So while our feelings don't lie, we have learned to ignore them. While our feelings don't lie, we have learned to suppress them. But one of the themes of this prayer practice is that when we suppress those feeling layers of awareness, we do so at the expense of self-awareness. You can pretty much see it. Remaining unaware is at odds with a prayer practice that is titled the Prayer of Self-Awareness. And when the deep question asking becomes a regular, rhythmic part of our daily lives, we find over time that we become more and more and more aware of the stories that we tell ourselves, more and more and more aware of the deep beliefs that we hold and don't see and never challenge. The prayer of confession awakens us to awareness. That's what the prayer is about. So, we awaken desire and attentiveness. We practice examine on a regular basis. We write things down in order to deepen our attentiveness. We ask ourselves questions about the stories that we tell ourselves. We pay attention to our bodies, pay attention to our feelings to improve our understanding of the stories that we tell ourselves. And we do this for a year or two or five or seven. And then, After making this part of the practice of our lives, the normally opaque layers of awareness that we cannot see into become increasingly transparent. And we become increasingly familiar with the territory of what goes on down inside of our souls. The fruit of the prayer of confession is the gift to which Socrates invited us, to know thyself. The fruit of the prayer of confession is the gift to which Paul invited us, to have our minds renewed. We get familiar with the territory in there, and we start to see the next layer of awareness, that interior circle that I've titled core wounds. I could have just as easily have titled it core beliefs or core narratives or primal hurts, something like that. The fruit of the long-term practice of paying attention to our bodies and then reframing the stories that we tell ourselves, listening with keen awareness and asking deep shaping questions, is that we start to understand what are the things that we carry around that so profoundly shape our lives. What pitfalls do I tend to fall into? Because I fall into the same ones again and again and again. What are they and why are they there? The things that run our daily lives, the false beliefs or the experiences from the past or the wounds that we carry, these deeply shaping things become part of the texture of our understanding. And we are forewarned and we are forearmed. When we are able to examine our core beliefs, which, by the way, the Enneagram really helps us do well. When we're able to understand our core beliefs, we gain the greatest benefit of this prayer practice. We realize what are the primal pitfalls to which we are vulnerable. What are the primal stories that infect our souls? Because when we can begin to see them, that's the first step in disidentifying with them. You've heard me say that before. When you can see something, there's now two yous. There's the you that's embroiled in it, and there's the you that can stand outside of it and look at it. That's what the prayer of confession does for us. Seeing our stories, we can question our stories. Seeing our stories, we can begin to understand the toxic influence they have in our lives. I'll have a little bit more to say next week about the question asking part of this, but for today I want to conclude with this. You know, if you've been part of our community's Facebook page, that I am being asked to leave the denomination that I've been part of for 30 years. I've long thought that the way that I tell the Christian story is consistent with the group, just framed in a different context. Over the years, they've stretched to include me and stretched some more to include me, but after I wrote the book, they couldn't stretch that far, and it's been sad, and it's been a painful process. But when our doctrinal committee called me to our first meeting, they invited Denise to come along as well. And as you can imagine, her feeling loving, protective feelings for her husband, it was a meeting that produced some afflictive emotions in her. And so she told me when the meeting was over that something that had been said during the what are you thinking time the week before had been very helpful. And I wish I knew who the person was. She described the person, but I couldn't make the connection. I think the person was sitting either right where Tammy is, somewhere over there, I think. Well, that's what she told me. But anyway, the person said this. When you're finding yourself in the midst of a drama, when you're embroiled in an afflictive emotion, when the internal kettle is boiling over, but you want to transcend the boiling, you want to live a more self-aware life, here's a helpful tip. Now, the person didn't say that. Those are my words that I've interpreted from what I heard secondhand from Denise. But the tip is this. Take the personalities out of the drama that you're in, and don't watch the personalities. Instead, watch your own interior response. Instead, what are you doing? What are you feeling? What are you saying in your mind? How are you reacting? Well, that registered with Denise the week before we went to this meeting. And as we were sitting there for 6 hours, sitting there, and while we were going through this process, that kept coming back to Denise. Take these personalities out of the mix and watch. Watch me. watch my feelings, watch my thoughts, watch my emotions, watch my stories. And the beauty of that wisdom that Denise gained from our community is that that is the very process we're talking about in this ancient prayer. That is rooted in this ancient prayer practice. That is this. We use this prayer practice to look within so that we know what is going on inside. And it happens at the times in our lives when we would so much rather think about anything than what's going on here. But the ancient wisdom is to not focus out there where the bad guys are. The ancient wisdom is to focus here, to say, what is going on inside of me? You can't do anything about transformation and change for the other, but you can do something about transformation and change here. You can change the equation here when you can't change the equation there. And that is the wisdom of the prayer of confession. So we'll pick up there next week with some more questions that we can ask ourselves. So Holy Spirit of God, to be self-aware, to be awakened to the way and to the truth and to the life, to have conscious understanding of our bodies and of our minds, of the stories that we tell ourselves, and to experience what Paul prayed for us, that we would have our minds renewed. That's our prayer. Be it so in us and among us. In Jesus' name, amen.